Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Mama, yeah, on the floor and move your booty, mama. We the Blastmasters blasting at the jammer.
He didn't form this band, but he made them stars. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today on the show, a smackdown about Steve Jobs and his impact on music. Plus, a look at what happens when two other powerful names in music, Jay-Z and Kanye West, make an album together. But first, when Steve Jobs announced last week that he's stepping down from his post as CEO of Apple, it marked the end of an era. At least, that's what I thought. That night, I posted a blog on the WNYC website in which I wrote, "Steve Jobs has probably had more of an impact on the music world than any other person in the last quarter century." Well, that sparked a bit of an uproar among some of our listeners, and that has led us to ask, is Steve Jobs really the most influential person in music? And if he isn't, who is? That's the question for this week's
Soundcheck Smackdown.
And ganging up on me here in the studio are Nathan Brackett, senior editor at Rolling Stone, and Maura Johnston, music editor at The Village Voice. And Nathan, Maura, thanks for joining us. I think.
Thanks for having us.
Now, admit it, Maura, Steve Jobs is important.
Oh, undoubtedly. I mean, he, you know, helped save the music industry's bacon as far as, you know, getting people to buy digital music. But he was also cleaning up a mess that had been created years before the establishment of the iTunes store by file sharing and by Sean Fanning, I would say, of who created Napster, which was the sort of, you know, first breaking point of allowing people to bring digital music in single song formats, which is key because a couple of years earlier, the major labels had tried sort of to phase out the CD single in hopes that they would boost album sales. And Sean Fanning's invention allowed people, over very slow dial-up connections, I might add, to sort of bring in music piecemeal into their houses and buy singles. And, well, not buy, but acquire singles the way that they had been used to doing and not being forced to buy the sort of what I would call the 12-track maxi single that were so many albums that had the one single and so many other songs.
I used to enjoy those maxi single cassettes.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, you know, and I want to just say that when I wrote this blog, it was late at night, and, you know, I read it again the next day, and I thought, no, I'm sticking by this.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's a little rhapsodic. The tone was...
Well, but, you know, I did say for better or worse, so... You know, so, but so Maura.
If I could just interject, I think I can speak for both Maura and myself that we both enjoy iPods and we use Apple products.
Yes.
But now you agree with Maura, apparently, that Sean Fanning.
For the sake of argument, like to say that, Sean Fanning created the conditions that made the iPod necessary and the iTunes Music Store necessary. I think if you look at the music business in 1999. Versus 2001, you had a whole generation of teens and college kids who basically stopped buying $18 CDs because of Napster, which is the company.
So Sean Fanning, just to be clear, Sean Fanning founded Napster, and we're talking about that period of 1998 to 2001 when Napster gets shut down.
The year 2000 is really the year that the music business just turned on its hinges. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of a fascinating time. I mean, there might be a book there because, I mean, you look at the VMAs that year, you have the height of Britney Spears and NSYNC selling 2.3 million CDs on their first week. I mean, the gilded age of the music business.
You the establishment of the Diamond Award.
Diamond Award, yeah.
Which was sort of the Icarus moment too close to the sun. Yeah, the Diamond Award,
Five million CDs?
Yeah. It's 10 million, actually. 10 million CDs shipped. So it's gold, platinum, and then diamond and RIA certifications.
But at the same time, in the year 2000, there's this undercurrent where, you know, everything is being turned upside down. And that's because of the invention of, you know, not the invention, but the first music peer-to-peer service, which is Napster.
Although, as Maura puts it, it was left to Steve Jobs and iTunes to clean that mess up.
And to make people used to paying for what they were getting.
Right.
This isn't for this show, but I mean, there are a lot of record biz executives and other people who would say that iTunes really didn't clean up the mess. It actually made it worse.
That's true.
Because,
That's
I mean, the point, I think a lot of people would say that the people who weren't buying CDs before Steve Jobs came along with the iTunes store were not going to be buying them. But iTunes sped up the fact that basically no one had a reason to buy an album anymore after iTunes. The people who were still paying for CDs actually started buying 99-cent songs. So, you know, maybe this is for a different show. But
right, but you know. 99 cents is better than free if you're in the music industry.
Well, and you're also paying for the, you know, the certainty that you'll get a file that you want and not like, you know, somebody's jokily misnamed Britney Spears file that's actually, you know, dogs barking for 4 minutes.
You know, but getting back to Steve Jobs, I mean, you know, it just struck me that it wasn't just the gizmos. I mean, the guy had an ear. You know, he was very involved in the creative aspect of those commercials, in how they looked, and especially in how they sounded. And, you know, just as his products, I think, changed music, he also put a lot of musicians on the map, like the Black Eyed Peas that we heard before, or this artist, Feist. That is Feist. 1, 2, 3, 4 was featured in the iPod Nano commercial back in 2007. Prior to the airing of that commercial, this song from the album The Reminder was selling at 2,000 downloads per week and the album 6,000 copies per week. After the commercial, the song passed 73,000 downloads and then reached number 7 on the Hot Digital Songs chart, and the album went to number 8 on the Billboard Hot 100. So I think Feist would agree that Steve Jobs was pretty important to her.
I guess Sean Fanning doesn't have as good a soundtrack.
No.
We're speaking with Nathan Brackett, the deputy managing editor at Rolling Stone, Maura Johnston, the music editor at The Village Voice. What do you think? Who has been the most influential person in music in the past 25 years? One name, one person, past quarter century. Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. Or leave a comment on the Soundcheck page, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Both Nathan and Maura have already mentioned Sean Fanning, the guy who started Napster and who nearly drove the music industry to its knees during the course of a 3-year run before that version of Napster was shut down in 2001. And despite the fact that, you know, I'm saying this is, you only get one crack at it, you get one name, we're going to give you each both another name. So, Nathan, you first.
Okay, well, going a little further back, I would throw out the name Kool Herc, you know, who more than probably any other person out there is responsible for inventing hip hop, you know, in the parks of New York in the 70s. He basically, you know, invented the idea for our purposes of playing the kind of funkiest part of a record and making a DJ set out of that. He basically invented the breakbeat. All of hip hop really flows from that one point. I mean, he's changed, you know, what you're hearing on the radio, you know, people's playlists, the content of people's playlists
in a hugely significant way. And the idea of using someone else's recording as part of your own performance, your own music. And then and that goes back to, I mean, we actually have like documentation of the day, the night in that apartment in the South Bronx where he did the party that he
first
did.
Which is pretty remarkable. I mean, you don't have that for the blues.
So now you're going, you're almost 40 years. 1972, we're talking about.
Going a little further back.
What about you, Maura? You got another name to throw out?
It's a layup, but I'll say it. Michael Jackson, in so many ways, you know, changed the way that people listen. I mean, so many artists cite him as an influence. He even sort of presaged the whole, like, celebrity industrial sad complex that we have now, where people are constantly looking for the worst side. But seriously, like, they're, you know, they're looking for the worst sides of famous people. Obviously, like, his music is undeniable, and the songs that he has put out, that he put out during his career, you know, you can just say certain titles, you can say Beat It, Thriller, Bad, and people will just start singing, or they'll know the melodies right away. You but know, also, just his whole career arc was very sort of, I think it really predicted a lot of what would happen to celebrity culture in the United States and music culture too.
And when he passed away, I noted on the show that he wasn't called the King of Pop Music. He was called the King of Pop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his
it was a self-proclaimed King of Pop.
Yeah,
but
yeah. You know,
no, but
I mean, here's a guy who
untrue,
had
exactly.
Important in music, important in the creation of, or the acceleration of the music video, and in the wider culture. Michael Jackson from 1987's album Bad. Michael Jackson, the album Bad was released 24 years ago. We're asking you, who is the single most influential or important person in the music world in the past 25 years? I suggested Steve Jobs in what has turned out to be a rather controversial blog posting after Jobs announced last week that he was stepping down as CEO of Apple. And both Nathan Brackett and Maura Johnston are here with me in the studio to disabuse me of that notion with various other alternative number ones. And joining us on the line now is the author and freelance music writer Alex Cook, who has a suggestion of his own. Hi, Alex.
Oh, hi. I would suggest somebody, you know, with Michael Jackson being the King of Pop, I'd go for some royalty that needed no qualifications. And that'd be Prince. I think Prince has... in the last 25 years, not only, a synthesis of different kinds of music, but also he's one of the first major artists to really upset the paradigm of how a major artist does their work. He gave his albums away for free in the newspaper. He put his stuff online through his own portal. He even changed his name, at one point to disavow himself from that system. And I think that through that, Prince opened the door for artists to see that there are multiple ways of doing these things. Mm-hmm. I think, Steve Jobs with Apple, the current concept of how we consume music is unthinkable without Apple. But I wonder if, in 20 years, will he be remembered in the same way like Bill Lear is for inventing the 8-track tape? That iTunes and iPods give us a portability for the music, that was a lineage from 8-track tapes and from Walkmans and from whatever the next thing, from streaming media, and things like that. So I think he built, Steve Jobs is an important bridge person in the technology, but I think,
You're going to go with Prince.
I would go with Prince in the last 25 years, yeah.
All right. Soundcheck listeners, what do you think? Alex Cook has put forth the name of Prince as the king of music for the past quarter century. We want to know what you think. Our number again, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or leave a comment on the Soundcheck page. You can see what some of your fellow listeners have suggested at wnyc.org/soundcheck.
Maybe you could be
to be rich, to be
debating that Prince certainly has been influential, as has Michael Jackson and all the other names we've mentioned so far. And in a moment, we'll continue our debate over the most influential single person in music over the past 25 years. We'll take your calls, get to more of your comments, and later, speaking of influential, we'll take a look at the latest release from two of the most important figures in hip-hop, the Kanye West Jay-Z collaboration called Watch the Throne. This is Soundcheck. Bloody Mary.
Bloody murder, murder, murder. Papery murder. Black on black murder. Papery murder. Black on black murder. Oh, Steve Jobs. Oh, Steve Jobs. You're a great guy. You're a great inventor. You come up with very good ideas.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. And they are Papa Rotzi and the Photogs with their song Steve Jobs, You Are a Great Guy. And Steve Jobs is sort of the subject of our SmackDown. He announced last week that he'll be stepping down as the CEO of Apple, and it led me, to wonder whether Steve Jobs has had perhaps the single greatest impact on music in the past quarter century, a notion that has been roundly criticized by some listeners. But then the question is, if not Jobs, then who? Here with me in the studio once again, Nathan Brackett, deputy managing editor at Rolling Stone, Maura Johnston, music editor at The Village Voice, and lots of listeners on the line and leaving us comments on the web. Who do you think has had the greatest impact on music in the past quarter century? Our number again, 212-433-WNYC. And to leave a comment, it's wnyc.org/soundcheck. Why don't we go into the control room where Joel Meyer has a bunch of those comments. Am I getting any love out there, Joel?
John, you are not getting a lot of love, actually. All I'm seeing on the Soundcheck page right now is more outrage over your pick of Steve Jobs as the most influential person in music since 1986. Here's what Gary from The Village had to say. He forced the record industry to stop cramming albums with one hit song and 10 really bad ones down our throats at $20 a shot. And John from Manhattan writes, if by influence you mean driving the last nail in the coffin, lighting the pyre, and then dancing around the flames of an already moribund industry, then you might have a point, John Schaefer. And Sandra from the Lower East Side writes, I'm not sure changing the delivery of music is really that revolutionary. What is more interesting is the rise of musicians like Susan Boyle and Rebecca Black, who became rock stars globally in days. So what about YouTube creators?
Well, that sort of leads to the people who create the YouTube creations, the media creators, the Simon Cowell.
Simon
Maura.
Cowell. I was going to say that, you know, Simon Cowell's establishment of American Idol as this sort of delivery system of pop stars on TV. Obviously, people like Kelly Clarkson and Carrie Underwood were very successful when shepherded by Simon Cowell, and even people who didn't win American Idol, like Chris Daughtry, Jennifer Hudson. Although I will say that, you know, his creation has sort of, I think, waned in importance for the up-and-coming stars. However, it's been actually very useful for stars that sort of want to give their career a boost, like Jennifer Lopez is a great example. Whereas, even though her and Simon didn't overlap on American Idol, being a judge on American Idol this year was undoubtedly great. I mean, her recording career two years ago was seen as like dead in the water. Mm-hmm. She was hopping around and falling on the American Music Awards, and that was the sort of joke that everyone had. And so, now she has a chart-topping single again.
So Kelly Clarkson, in and of herself, not one of the most, you know, not the most influential person of the last 25 years.
Kelly Clarkson is just awesome.
But Simon Cowell, who put her in that pop music position, certainly a contender. Kelly Clarkson, part of the American Idol hit-making factory, the brainchild of Simon Cowell. who's perhaps, you know, a contender for this mythical position of king of music of the last 25 years. Again, I had suggested Steve Jobs because of the remarkable impact that iTunes and iPads and iPods have had on the way we not only hear music but market music and you know, expect to, you know, have music with us virtually any moment, any time we want. And Zippers left a comment that says, "It is obscene for you to applaud Steve Jobs for being behind the company that created the products that killed the long play record and sound appreciation. Without iTunes and its ilk, many artists would still be able to sell CDs." I think that killed long playing records. "And without iPods, people would still be listening to music instead of becoming music zombies, thirsting for ever larger, ever untouched iTunes libraries." I just want to say, I did mention in the original blog that started this whole thing that there was definitely, you know, a kind of a sound problem you had to deal with. But Nathan, this idea of, you know, consuming and collecting ever larger libraries of music that you then don't have time to even listen to, is there a devaluing of music as a result of this?
I mean, there is something to that. I mean, you said in your blog post that Steve Jobs made it easier to access music and find music, but the fact is when you have 60 gigs of music on your iPod, it can be overwhelming. Yeah. And it's actually sometimes more is actually less, or it feels like, you know, that to some people. There's something to that. I mean, I kind of like having, say, like, you know, 200 CDs just on top of my turntable stereo that kind of I access frequently. They're just there. There's something to that, you know.
I suppose one doesn't necessarily eliminate the possibility of the other.
Yeah, I don't know if you can entirely hang that on Steve Jobs.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah.
It might be a little unfair. I mean, one name that I threw out there with you before is another possible contender for the king of music would be Karlheinz Brandenburg, who the inventor of the MP3, along with his team of researchers.
Nick from the Upper West Side nominates Bernhard Grill, Karlheinz Brandenburg, Thomas Sporer, Bernd Korten, and Ernst Eberlein. They invented
Nick is much better with the details than me. But
The MP3.
They invented the MP3, and if you look at it, I mean, it's like nobody has a first-generation iPod anymore, but we all still use MP3s. I mean, people have messed with the codec. People have tried to replace the MP3, but it really is the standard. And the introduction of the MP3 made Napster possible and the iTunes record store possible and the iPod possible. So there's something to that.
Okay.
It's a deeply geeky pick, though.
You can always go one step back.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Jeremy's on the line with us from Colts Neck, New Jersey. And Jeremy, what's your take on all this?
Well, John, I haven't really want to throw a kink into things and suggest that this entire discussion has been focusing exclusively on popular music. And there's a world of music out there which has transcended popular music, and that is classical music. And I would like to put forth the name more in representation of James Levine, mm-hmm. of the Metropolitan Opera and of late of the Boston Symphony, someone who is bringing popular or classical music back to the public and keeping it alive. And I think that classical music is going to be around a lot longer than a lot of the stuff you're hearing on the airwaves today or on your iPod.
Well, you know, Jeremy, I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, to me, one of the things that separates someone like Steve Jobs from a Michael Jackson or a Prince is the fact that his influence has been beyond genre. You know, there are people walking around with James Levine and Alan Gilbert and Gustavo Dudamel on their iPods, listening to their MP3s of Schubert symphonies and Wagner operas and stuff. Let's take another call. Omas, joining us from Hollis, Long Island. Omas, you have a name to throw into the conversation?
I absolutely do. Thank you guys for having me. I listen all the time. For the sake of arguing, I would say, you know, I wanted to throw out Jimmy Iovine's name. He's one of the most powerful executives in all of the music business, and I really don't want to give Steve Jobs the credit as a retailer. It kind of seems a little awkward to me to give a retailer, which is what I think Steve Jobs ultimately is, a glorified retailer. I wouldn't want to put that position on somebody who's at the helm of the creativity, at the helm of the creation of the content, And, you know, just for the sake of argument, Jimmy Iovine, he's a really powerful figure. You talk about the Black Eyed Peas. Well, Steve Jobs wouldn't have the Black Eyed Peas have promoted had it not been for many of the initiatives that Jimmy was able to push through with his music group. So that's, I just wanted to put that out there. And also, Afrika Bambaataa is really, he put a face to the hip-hop.
Yeah, yeah. But if you're going to mention
Jimmy... You said Kool Herc, but I just wanted to throw out Afrika Bambaataa too, guys.
Yeah. If you mention Jimmy, and this is the thing, once you mention one artist, you have to mention others. Once you mention a producer, there are others. A record executive, you know, more like Jimmy Iovine, you know, do you pick him over...
Over Clive Davis.
Clive Davis. Right.
I mean, you know, that's sort of, when you get into sort of the splitting hairs and you sort of get into the shared kingdom, I guess. But it is true that, you know, talking about the way, like... the sort of forces behind the music, whether it is a retailer or whether it is an executive. I mean, ultimately, I think that it's funny that those are the sorts of people that we came up with first, and then, you know, we sort of filter out into artists, because obviously music is such a wide swath of tastes and mm-hmm. people having, you know, different things that they like to listen to, that it is sort of these people behind the scenes who might be more influential. I was actually trying to rack my brain to think of one executive, too, while I was prepping for the show.
And Clive Davis really is, you know, the...
Yeah, I mean, I think for the last 25 years, Jimmy Iovine might be you know, probably the most influential executive. I mean, he presided over, you know, Dr. Dre, you know, mm-hmm. 50 Cent, Lady Gaga. I mean,
But Clive Davis was sort of the model of the old-style record industry mogul.
Yeah. Yeah, going further back, somebody like Ahmet Erdogan, mm-hmm.
right,
you know,
who founded Atlantic Records,
and actually had something to do with helping to popularize the album as a format. You know, he has a great story.
Ahmet Erdogan is a very interesting figure, not only because of what you say, you know, popularizing the LP, but here's a guy who also went beyond one genre. Popular music, very strong presence in the jazz world as well. So,
and I think a lot of readers or viewers, listeners are reacting.
It's radio, Nathan. Radio.
Sorry, there's a little format shift. I think they're reacting to the fact that like the caller said, that Steve Jobs isn't a music guy.
Yeah.
That's true. And you know, and let's face it, iTunes. The iTunes store exists to sell iPods.
Right.
It's a loss leader for Apple. Maybe not a loss leader, but it's kind of, they look at it the same way.
Well, just as in the early days of recorded music, the recordings were there to sell record players.
That's right.
They were just the convenient thing to get you to buy the Victrola. Nathan Brackett is deputy managing editor at Rolling Stone magazine. Maura Johnston is music editor at The Village Voice. And Ralph is on the line with us from right here in New York City. Ralph, you got a name to throw in the hopper?
Hey, what's going on, everyone? Thank you for accepting my call.
So who is, to you, the most important figure in music in the last 25 years?
Well, you know, music has come such a long way from when I used to play vinyl and 45s downstairs in the basement with a little phonograph, open and close player. You've seen the whole birth of the CDs. Everybody thought the floppy disk was probably going to take over after a while. Then all of a sudden we've gone to the iPod and now MP3s and flash drives. So... When you think of iconic and most influential, you know, you have to take in perspective the engine that everybody has created. And one person that is kind of proof to that to me was actually the artist Drake, the hip-hop R&B artist Drake, because he actually showed people that you don't need the backing of a major label anymore. It's a social network world. For example, he went ahead and he did his first album. Obviously, he was under the tutelage of Lil Wayne, who's another multi-platinum, mm-hmm. as we know, ex-successful, you know, hip-hop mogul himself. But, you know, I wouldn't say mogul, but I'll say entrepreneur, actually. And he went ahead and showed the world, hey, you know what, I got good music. I got a lot of friends on Facebook. And, you know, Mark Zuckerberg is another iconic person and influential for the music industry as well.
The founder
I'm going to let
Facebook,
people
yeah.
hear my stuff. I'm going to put it out there to all my friends. I'm going to let them share it. They're not downloading it, but I'm promoting myself in marketing. And you know what? I don't need to go ahead and go in with a suit or have a lawyer go ahead and solicit my demo tape through one of these major labels and stuff, you know. I'm going to show the world that I could do this myself, kind of, you know.
Ralph, that's a really interesting way of looking at the career of Drake as someone who has been able to kind of maybe skirt around the edges of the music industry as we used to know it. Here's a little bit of music from the aforementioned Drake.
Y'all, I swear it feels like the last few nights. We've been everywhere and back, but I just can't remember it all. What am I doing?
What am I doing? Oh yeah, that's right, I'm doing me. I'm doing me. I'm living life right now, man. And this what I'ma do till it's over. Till it's over. But it's far from over. Alright, bottles on me. Long as I'ma drink it. Never drop the ball. Y'all thinking?
Song is Over by Drake, and Ralph thought that Drake was a kind of emblematic figure in music recently. Let's take one final call. JT is on the line with us from Brooklyn. What you got, JT?
How's it going? I've just been listening to everything that you guys have been talking about, and I think Steve Jobs is pretty good, but I wanted to say MTV might have quite an influence on the landscape of music.
Is that one person?
Music television. Well, just in general, you know.
All right.
The whole conglomerate, MTV, VH1, you know, bringing music to the forefront, you know, visually to everybody around the world. So.
Nathan Moore, what do you think?
Romney said that corporations are people.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so we're going to allow JT to suggest MTV. What do you guys think?
Did it serve as a national radio station for a really long time, and its, you know, emphasis on non-music programming did kind of dovetail with this sort of last year, the 10-year, I wouldn't say death spiral, but the sort of problems that have been happening in the music industry in the last 10 years. And it definitely, you know, there were definitely bands that were helped along by being played on what was once Dial MTV and then morphed into eventually TRL before it was killed. It definitely helped shape a lot of the idea of teen pop as pop. And teen pop as pop for adults, which I think is a development that is some sort of interesting and not talked about a lot.
And to go back to Michael Jackson, I mean, MTV made possible Thriller, which in turn fed into the careers of people like Michael Jackson and, of course, this artist, Madonna. So, all right, we'll allow MTV as a name. Mitt Romney would approve, apparently. We've been speaking with a couple of people from the print side of things. Nathan Brackett, deputy managing editor at Rolling Stone, Maura Johnston, music editor at The Village Voice, and I'm sticking with a guy who's not in print or radio or TV. I'm sticking with Steve Jobs, but there are lots of other contenders. Who is the most influential person in music in the last 25 years? You can leave your comment on our webpage at wnyc.org/soundcheck. Nathan and Maura, thank you both for being with us and playing our little game today.
Thanks.
This is Soundcheck. I feel unscathed after that smackdown. Still to come, Jay-Z and Kanye West are angling to be the kings of influence on their recent collaboration, Watch the Throne. We'll hear more about that next. And join us in the green space on Monday, September 19th, for a special soundcheck session with the Jayhawks. The alt-country icons are releasing their first new album in 8 years. It's called Mockingbird Time, and it features the original songwriting duo of Gary Louris and Mark Olson. The Jayhawks will play a special radio set in the green space for us. We're taping it for an upcoming episode of Soundcheck, and you can be there with us on Monday evening, September 19th at 6. Get your tickets at wnyc.org/thegreenspace.